KIW iRadio 76 proudly presents the 515 Show with your host, John Sarver. Who's at the 515 door today?
This is where we get to say goody, goody, goody. Only be on so many different levels. We so look forward to having this next gentleman as our guest. He is a five-time reigning champion. He does wear the gold belt for being on the 515, the most of anybody else has been. Also, he was with, like we were saying before, he was on the very, very first 515 show. And then thank you, Podbean, for reminding us all and giving us that sticker and the award, blah, blah, that, you know, we did 100 shows. So it does, it's just fitting that we have the legendary Brian Wolf with us again today on the 515, kicking off our new set of 100 shows. Hiya, Brian. How you doing?
Doing great, John. Thanks for having me on.
I am so glad that you are cold here in Michigan with the rest of us and shoveling snow. Does your back hurt?
No. Back's fine. I'm actually down in Palm Beach right now, enjoying the sun and the ocean.
And I'm taking it you're not down there for the Mopar versus the World?
No.
Okay, so let's do this right off the top, just because it's going to be so fun. Now, let us talk about this over-heavy-weighted truck motor that you need to build thousands of dollars for it to run. It's underpowered, it doesn't breathe well, and it has a Japanese name. Did we get them all?
Yeah, I think so. So, for some of the keyboard warriors on the internet that don't do their homework. The new truck motor, as we like to call them, and in the old Mustang that I have one, and I like to call it my old Ford with a truck motor. They're pretty stout right out of the factory. You know, truth be told. But they can be improved on fairly easily as well. So, the head's out of the factory, flow just over 300 CFM on the intake side, which is pretty stout for two-valve. And, when you do run these things, with as any engine builder runs them, which is corrected to standard temperature and pressure, dyno headers, no air inlet systems, they make about 500 horsepower.
You know what, Alan is waving to me right now, because what we did not do was we didn't tell the people that may be listening to us right now in Norway and Ireland, and I see also in, I can't pronounce the city of Italy, but we are talking about the Godzilla motor that Brian had a nice size hand in, I would say, bringing it to market.
Yes, let's just give a little background. In 2020, Ford had to replace the 6.8-liter V10 in their Super Duty trucks. And the reason for that was to improve the CO2 emissions, mainly on things called incomplete vehicles. And what incomplete vehicles are like when you see like a U-Haul or a box truck, so it leaves Ford without like a box on the back. So it's got a cab, it's got a running gear, it starts and runs, but it's not a complete vehicle yet. And those vehicles are certified for emissions on a dynamometer as opposed to a set of chassis rolls as a complete vehicle would be. So that was the main driver for the program. The 6.8 was a very good engine. It was a derivative of the 5.4. It was really cost effective when we were building 5.4s because there's very, very high volume associated with that. But again, the CO2 was long in the tooth, if you will, not as good as it needed to be going into the, the 2020s. So a program was set in place to replace that engine. And when I went back to North America from Europe and was able to be lucky enough to run Global Engine Engineering, the program was already kind of started it in progress. At that point in time, like so many things at so many companies, you kind of continue to do more of the same of what you've done. So the engine that was kind of the natural to put in there was a larger version of the 6.2 liter single overhead cam engine, and that was going to be a 6.9 liter. However, my problem with that was we were putting in all brand new facilities, so it was a very expensive program. When you have to put an engine plant in, it's hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, to facilitize those plants with all the tooling. And I just felt that I didn't know if just let's take this and modify it if it was the best solution. So I asked the team to, you know, look at other alternatives and prove to me that that is something that I could be proud of putting that much money in. Because, again, you know, when the company and the shareholders are entrusting you with that much money for a program, you know, it's your obligation to question everything and make sure it's the right thing.
So wait a minute. So what people are asking right now is you're the one that's looking to improve this, but yet you're the one with the final say-so and checkbook, right?
Absolutely. Now there's two different versions, right? So one of the things is when you have to do an engine for production, there's certain sets of constraints around that. When you're doing an engine for aftermarket performance, there's a different set of constraints around that. So for the engine that went into production, a big portion of that was fuel economy. The cam timing was set for, you know, hundreds of thousands of miles of durability with that set of cam events. When you go to an aftermarket camshaft, and again, anybody, you know, that would, you know, that does this, you know, you have quicker ramps, you have increased spring pressures, which also will take, you know, little bits and tidbits away from fuel economy, but it's something you need to get more air into the cylinders and added efficiencies. So I think the engine as produced, I really don't think, you know, from a pushrod engine perspective anyways, I think it'd be pretty hard pressed to find something better. And then, which leaves it very, very prime from an aftermarket perspective, because a lot of the work we've done, you know, we have a stock cylinder block, we have a stock crankshaft, we have stock cylinder head casting. So, you know, you get the guys that talk about the brand X engine coming out of Pontiac, Michigan, formerly out of Warren. I mean, you know, they'll put a set of aftermarket heads, aftermarket intakes, all these parts, and then say, well, look, you know, how good it is. Well, and they are. I mean, those engines are very, very good in their own way. But, you know, these are stock head castings that haven't even been welded on to take, you know, full advantage. And, you know, these things can flow near 400 CFM. And they're being built, you know, not in only a, you know, a Corvette LS7, you know, with, you know, only a handful made.
Yeah.
These are going to 250,000 vehicles a year, and they're going to be extremely plentiful, you know, in salvage yards as unfortunate things happen and vehicles get totaled and other things, you know, go wrong.
Was that by design, Brian?
The what?
To have all these cars, I mean, all these engines that would be plentiful enough to go to a scrapyard and say, cool, I could use this block.
No, I mean, that was a, you know, that's a fallout of pretty much anything that's, you know, that's production. Now, that being said, I knew that the engine would be desirable to aftermarket. And one of the things I did was with the manager that was initially running the program that, you know, put the pack program together. So, at Ford, we had a thing called an engine systems group, and they were accountable to put the overall package together. So they had to interface with the engine plant, the vehicle customers, the design engineers, the development engineers inside to put the whole program together. And when I walked in his office one morning, you know, kiddingly, we're talking about, you know, performance reviews, et cetera. And I said, well, and this one, you will be judged on what percentage of these vehicles are stolen or the engines are removed for other uses.
Great. So this guy unleashes all these guys to steal cars.
Pretty much.
So he could make some more money this year. Job well done. You know, the question just came off the hotline here at CKWI Radio 76. And if you got any questions for Brian Wolf, send them. We'll be glad to have him ask Brian on the air here. And I know you LS people cut it out. So, you know, why didn't you go to like a V8 with a turbo, keeping with this V6 turbo thingy that they put in trucks?
Well, you know, to be frank, one of the things about the way that the engine was engineered, which, you know, kind of takes the OE, you know, original equipment manufacturer perspective, is to try to keep it as simple as possible while delivering the overall program objectives. So, and what I mean by that is, if you look at this engine, you know, the only true, you know, technology is variable cam timing, right? I mean, other than that, it's just a very well-engineered, durable engine. You know, deep skirt blocks, 6-bolt mains like Ford's had in production since 1993. Sorry, LS fans.
I was going to say, dig.
You guys weren't the first ones to do it. You know, before the LS was even thought of, it was on the 4.6. And then, you know, so it's a good durable block. Very well-engineered valve train. So one of the things about having so many overhead cam engines in production is pretty much most companies will have like a set of design guides where they want certain attributes or characteristics of different subsystems within the engine. So when they did that, and you have these overhead cam engines, you say, okay, we want a certain valve train stiffness. So this engine was also a little push rod designed to meet those types of standards. Now, of course, this doesn't have a valve train as good as a Coyote. Does not. But it's a very stiff valve train. It's got 60-millimeter cam journals from the factory. It's got, you know, roller lifters, as, you know, Ford's had in production since 1985. So these things, you know, taking advantage of those different things. And then a very, very nice investment cast rocker arm, which is, you know, extremely stiff with a 1.8 ratio. So it's got a lot of those foundation pieces in it that just makes it, you know, a really good performer. And then to get the fuel economy, the main thing that we had to do was we put the compression ratio up at 10.5 to 1, even though this thing is a 4.22-inch bore, 107.5 millimeters for our friends in Europe. And even with that big of a bore, you know, it still has a very good burn rate, and, you know, it is just extremely, extremely capable. So with that fast burn rate and with the VCT, the 10.5 to 1 compression, you know, this engine, you know, gets extremely good fuel economy. Our competitors, you know, in that truck segment, you know, they either have direct injection and variable displacement on top of the VCT, or at least the variable displacement without direct injection, or 2 plugs per cylinder. So, you know, this design, the guys did, I think, such a, you know, spectacular job, people don't fully realize it. And then they'll come back, well, it doesn't make a lot of power per, you know, cubic inch. Oh, yes, I'll give you that. But on the other hand, that was by intent, because with the way the cam timing was set, with a very late intake valve closing, with the VCT and the lobe separation of the cam, it gives that opportunity to run that 10.5 to 1 compression and get a very good efficiency without having to resort to variable displacement. When you do that, yes, you give up some specific power, but that's why when we just put a camshaft in the engine and do a little bit of cleanup on the cylinder heads, you know, we pick up like 95 horsepower, and that's, you know, that's a good reason, but we didn't need to do that to get competitive power and torque because of the displacement we used. So the guys really put a lot of thought into the engine to make it really work in the truck. Works great, but then, you know, again, with a few tweaks, it works even, you know, super good. And, you know, as I mentioned, I'm down in Florida, and I don't want to, you know, kind of say partners, but there's a couple companies down here that we team with at Willis Performance, one of them being Palm Beach Dyno, who just released a video where they put, you know, our stage one camshaft and cylinder heads on. And this is a super duty truck, you know, probably weighs 70-some hundred pounds. And in the quarter mile, the thing went 1407 at 100 miles an hour. And I'm going, you know, you think back to the, you know, the 5-liter Mustang days, my 86 Mustang GT went 1520s. Now, again, I know this had a little bit of work done on it, but again, this is a 7,000-pound-plus truck, with four-wheel drive, in four-wheel drive with big off-road, you know, tires on it that could go that quick. So, you know, the engine is extremely capable. And one of the things you'll like, John, if you do watch Palm Beach Dino's video at the drag strip, one of them, he was lined up against a Hemi, and they take off, and, you know, he takes the camera, and then he just pans over to where the Hemi is, then he goes to the side view mirror, and you just see it getting smaller and smaller in the mirror as he's going down the drag strip, because he was putting train lengths on it. It was great. I loved it.
And that's it for Brian Wolf today. Thanks for showing up, Brian. Well, again, which Hemi are we talking about? The 2.5 jet, the 2.6 jet that they had in 1978 from Mitsubishi?
No, this was just a Ram pickup truck with a Hemi. Oh, so he had a Ford truck with a 7.3 and a Dodge with the Hemi in it.
Brian, why do you think this engine's such a lightning rod for people?
I think, just like the LS, just like the original small block Chevy, just like the original small block Ford, the Gen 3 Hemi, you know, at that point in time where there are performance enthusiasts, you know, it's something that they can, cling to because it's a reasonably compact engine for the cubic inches. If you look at it versus like a 351 Windsor with a 9.5 deck height, it's a little bit wider because this is a 965 deck height. If you look at it versus a Cleveland, it's actually narrower. So it's a reasonable package size. And I think it just gives, you know, the Ford fans that, you know, maybe were a little intimidated by maybe a four-valve Coyote, something that they're, you know, a little bit more comfortable with. I think, you know, a lot of the customers I'm doing motors for are putting them in, like, you know, 1969 Broncos, old F-Series, where, you know, they got that grunt of displacement, you know, where the engines we do for them, you know, it's a pretty, you know, simple upgrade. And again, this is not J1349 SAE net. This is corrected to standard in temperature and pressure, like pretty much every engine builder on the planet uses, which does give you a higher number. And I can, if you're interested, we can go through how big that number is. But you know, we give them like 600 foot-pounds, 600 horsepower, and, you know, that amount of torque in those type of heavier vehicles is just a lot of fun to drive.
Well, see, that was the whole thing. We were sitting at the dinner table, and we're looking at, you know, we're reading the Facebook thing. I don't know why I do that, but I do anyways. You know, and I see all these, you know, I can't see all these, but you alluded to it in the very beginning of all these keyboard warriors that, you know, and that's the reason why we said all that stuff at the beginning, because that was like almost like the reoccurring themes every time there was going there. And Brian's there with his shield and his sword, and he's trying to beat back these dragons, because some of the things that people were asking, you did have to close one eye and go, how did you arrive to that question? You know, but I mean, why are they all picking on this Godzilla motor? What's the, you know, is it the only thing that Ford's got going for himself? Heck no.
No, I don't know why people, you know, are picking at it, you know, again, but, you know, performance enthusiasts, you know, that are brand loyal, you know,
yes,
they'll
better well
want to say,
yeah,
you know, they want to, you know, say the other stuff isn't as good. But let's face it, you know, even being a Ford guy my whole life, you know, leaning towards Mopars.
Leaning?
You know, let's face it, leaning, yeah. Let's face it, they're all good. You know, everyone's got a good product, and that's one of the things that is on my list of things to do this year is, you know, I'm going to, you know, have Evan Smith do another video where I get an old small block Chevy, the original 1955 design, you know, an LS, an old 302, a Coyote, not even a Coyote, like an early 464 valve, like from 93, a Gen 3 Hemi, and start to talk about them, like where people say, well, you know, this copied that, or this is, you know, no, I don't think so. I don't think the GM engineers, when they went from the small block Chevy, which had, you know, asymmetric ports, short skirt block, 5 head bolts per cylinder, and went and did the LS where it's symmetrical port, like small block Ford was, 4 head bolts per cylinder, like small block Ford did, deep skirt block, like the 464 valve did. I don't think they went and said, oh, okay, let's copy this stuff. They were saying, look, we're going to do upgrade this engine, which has been a great engine and served us well from 1955 based design up till the LS came out in the, you know, the late 90s. But if we're going to do this upgrade, you know, we do need the deep skirt block because we want to improve NVH. You know, this is with the latest technology of head gasket sealing. We don't need the 5. We're going to go with the 4. A symmetrical port layout, we think we can get a better answer for. So they did those things, not looking at Ford and saying that's what we want to do, just looking at everything available to them, all the technologies. And just like with this came, you know, engine comes out, you know, it's the same thing. The engineers are going what's best at that point in time to create a new architecture. So I'd like to walk through that because I think it'd be fun. And, you know, again, sometimes, you know, just laying out the facts and the truth is a lot of fun in and of itself, because then the opinions can stop and we can just focus on the truth and move on.
Well, you know, the funny thing is you brought up a really good thing. If you had to pick one motor from all the three food groups from, say, 1960 to present day, pick one Chevrolet motor, pick one Chrysler motor, pick one Ford motor. What would you pick?
Okay, well, Gen 3 Hemi would be, you know, I think that's, you know, I think they did a fantastic job on that. And I think it's done wonders for their brand, right? They've used it so much, and it's a really strong engine. I think, you know, from a Chevrolet perspective, you know, it'd be hard to pick anything other than an LS. And, you know, a Ford, I'd have a tough time because it would be between the Coyote and the Godzilla, you know, in my view. I think those are both really strong, and I'd have to, you know, kind of step back and flip a coin.
What would stop you from saying Godzilla all the way?
The Coyote is so good. I mean, you know, think about it for a minute. Right? Just from a engine perspective versus every other engine on the planet. Right, overhead cam, 4 valve per cylinder, near 100 horsepower per liter, and the only thing you have to do is change oil every 10,000 miles. Right, so look at Ferrari, look at Lamborghini, look at Mercedes, look at anybody, and does anybody have something at that capability? I don't think so. I think, and then you look at the factory stock showdown and NMCA and NHRA. You know, these engines, you know, do whatever calculator you want to use, but you know, the cars are 3,550 pounds and they can run, I think they went the quickest to 759 in the quarter mile at 184 miles an hour. How much horsepower does that take out of this, you know, 5.2 liter engine that they use in those cars, which is a Coyote based. So I mean, it's a really strong engine, and you know, the Godzilla has not proven itself at those levels yet. I think it will in time, but you can't talk about what you're going to do and make a reputation. You had to talk about what's been accomplished and see how that really stacks up.
So now, where does Willis go with the 6.6? I mean, now do we say, okay, look, heads up classes come this way. Hey, other racing classes come this way. Hey, how about other racing versions of the show come this way, off-road, etc.?
Well, you know, what we do, because, you know, we're just like, kind of, you know, we're a small shop, right? We're, you know, kind of 1.5 men type, you know, work, you know? So, you know, we've got a lot of partners we work with, but we're not out there, you know, looking to, you know, be a, you know, like a Holbrook Racing Engines, a Bischoff, a, you know, Anthony DeSoma that, you know, has many, many happy customers, you know, throughout and doing that. You know, what we try to focus on is, you know, 10 to 15 engines a year that, you know, and only 7.3s because, you know, that's what we can handle and do work with. Now, that doesn't mean we don't want to partner, or I don't say partner because that's probably too strong of work, but team up with people like Palm Beach Dyno that's using, you know, the cylinder heads and camshaft we developed and, you know, adapting them to trucks and then doing the calibration side of it, making something really cool for their customers. Or there's another group down here that I'm visiting tomorrow that we're teaming up with, a company called Five Bar Motorsports on the other side of the state. You know, that's doing drag engines. And again, you know, they're, you know, looking at parts and we're helping them with some of the parts that we developed. I was very, I guess, humbled where I got a call from a company, a sizable engine shop in Australia, Dandy Engines, that, you know, wanted to do, you know, a little bit of, you know, work together on, if you will. Dandy Engines, John. Okay. And, you know, they do a lot of Ford stuff. You know, they're kind of like an Anthony De Soma size or Holbrook. You know, they're, you know, in the States, if you're familiar with them. And, you know, they do a lot of really cool stuff. So, you know, we're excited and, you know, kind of, you know, honored, humbled, you know, flattered, you know, that they want to try some of our parts and see how that can work, you know, for them.
Are you going? Are you going to get on a plane?
No, I'm not going, but we ship parts, and they're going to be testing, you know, testing our stuff and see how they like it.
Yeah, but sooner or later, you going?
I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. Just in case.
It's 24 hours to get there. There's no good way, you know.
Do you see the 6.6 going into? I mean, can you?
We say 6.6. You mean the?
I mean the Godzilla. My mistake. Godzilla.
Yeah, 7.3. Yeah, 7.3.
7.3. Do you see? You know why? Because here's the story, and I'll be incredibly. There was a television show for CBS that was going to supersede the Dukes of Hazzard, and it had a Trans Am in it, and it had a 6.6, and it was the same thing shot. You know, jumping cars and doing all kinds of stuff, and it was called Georgia Peaches. And we had to explain to the people here what a 6.6 was.
Oh, okay.
And that was on my head. Sorry about that. No, the Godzilla motor. You know, I mean, do we branch out? Do you do like super off road? I mean, as opposed to, I mean, are you looking to put this engine when it comes to drag racing in what class? Pro mod, head up, what?
No, in drag racing, you know, the class that it would fit in now would be, you know, more alter street. But even so, I don't know with how fast those guys have now gone with the stock until there's an aftermarket head, if that would be, if it'd be able to be competitive. Because, I mean, the cars now are running, you know, 450s in the eighth mile. And I just don't know if that's going to be possible with that stock head casting. May, you know, not as much from the flow perspective, but just the deck thickness and the chamber thickness, and if it'll be able to be reliable at that type of, you know, levels of power you'd need to propel a car that quick.
Are you going to have time this year, Brian, to go out?
I don't know. I mean, the problem is that my car has been ready to go for 2.5 months, and I just need one day with the car just to get the tune up where I'm happy that it's okay, this is a good starting point. And then I need a day to get the trailer reset up and ready to put in. But, you know, the way I feel about the business is if I have customer projects, motors there, they have to be the priority over my own racing because, you know, without, you know, you're doing this stuff, you know, for the, you know, the exposure and for people to see, you know, what you can do and what you can deliver for them. But then if their stuff is waiting and they see you out racing, you know, they kind of scratch their head, right? So, you know, it's tough. And then, you know, obviously with everything else going on in life to make that happen. But hopefully within the next, you know, be back in Michigan again next week. I've got a real busy 2 weeks because I got a couple other companies I'm kind of teaming up with that we're going to be, they're coming by the shop. We're going to be doing some dyno work with them. And so you've got that going on. I've got, we're doing a Pro Charger build. So I'm hoping that I'm going to get those parts by the time I'm back so I can get that engine together on the dyno and see to make sure that performs as I think it will. And it's not, I'm not worried about the Pro Charger performance. I'm more just want to make sure camshaft that we selected is the right one, front accessory drive that we will need to put on because this customer is going to want air conditioning, power steering, in addition to the alternator and water pump hooked up. So just, you know, getting all that on the dyno, making sure it's going to be reliable, you know, for the customer before it goes out. And then, you know, we're doing this other car because we've got all these customers that were doing this, I call it the 600-600 combination for 600 foot-pounds, 600 horsepower.
Wow.
And we're sending that out with, you know, with a OBR control system in it, which is, you know, which we run in dyno, but, you know, you don't drive the dyno, you drive the car. And so we're putting this other car together to just make sure the drivability is good for those calibrations, and then that car is being converted over to a twin turbo with an automatic. I mean, and as a street car with a two-board Warner, 69-millimeter turbos. So just, I mean, lots of stuff going on in the racing. I will not be competing in any complete series. I'm going to try to make it to a couple events, though.
Like where?
Everything being even. It would be one of the, you know, the Donald Long races, you know, the No Mercies, the Stuck X production stuff, or NMCA. And again, it just depends on when I'm done and what races are still, are available to go to.
Yeah, because, I mean, you must be like, do you look over at the car and you go, one day we'll be racing there, kids.
Yeah, well, no, pretty much every day. It's just like, I just need the one day I can, you know, dedicate to you so we can get you ready to go. And then, of course, well, the other thing we've got to do is that I left out the one step is, working with Jason Lee, who tunes all my race cars. I need to get with him. We want to take this thing to a hub dyno before we go to the track, just to make sure, since everything's brand new in the car, that, you know, it's a lot easier to shake that down on a hub dyno than, you know, going down the track where you've got to, where there's a lot of other things involved, burnouts, brakes, you know, time between runs, where you can go to a hub dyno and just, you know, really do a lot of tuning very quickly and very efficiently. So we got to get that in as well.
And then where do you go? I mean, now with everything going on in the climate in Michigan, would you take it to where to test and tune?
It could be US 131, could be Norwalk, could be Dragway 42, could be Onondaga. I mean, it doesn't really matter. You know, they're all, as long as you have a good radio prep, that's all I would worry about.
What do you think about 42?
42 is really, it's a nice track. I tested there once with the X275 car. So, and they're very anxious to make sure people are happy there. You know, very, very friendly, focused, racer focused. So, definitely nice track. But, yeah, I think I could almost say that about every track, you know, that I just mentioned. You know, where, you know, they definitely want to make sure everybody's happy. Of course, we're hoping Milan will be back. In operation, of course, shortly too, because
it's close
from the house. It's 10 minutes from the house.
Yeah, that's when Milan went down. That was one of the first thoughts we had, was like, oh my gosh, Brian's now going to really, really have to trailer, you know.
Yep.
But I mean, what a good idea. Now, do you look back when you put the dyno in your, you know, in your backyard, in quotes? You know, now are you feeling pretty good that was an excellent decision? Because when we were talking about when you were putting the wiring together, it was like, man, this is a monster going back here.
Yeah, no, it's definitely the right. What was great. I mean, a good dyno session is as much fun to me as going to the track. When you're dialing it, you're seeing the changes. It allows you to do continuous improvement and refine, you know, your methods. So, and knowledge and things you can help other people with. So, yeah, having the dyno is great, because you don't have to say, I think. You can say, I know.
Nice job. Talking about nice job, we just hear something a little bit off the beaten path, but boy, are you the right person to ask. We have off the CKWI Radio 76 hotline. Good question. Gentleman has a 68 Mustang. It's a roller. 428 or 429 for street strip?
That's a tough choice. The 428 would probably be easier because FEs went into those cars. So, you know, that would be a natural. The 429 would, you know, why the Boss 302 went in. I mean, Boss 429 went in, which is a, you know, the 385 series. That's a bit longer, and it's going to be a bit wider. I don't know how that's going to fit the shock towers. The 428, I can tell you from my first car, 420 Cobra Jet Fairlane, that's extremely tight, and I got to believe the 429 would be tighter. But they'd both be great. The nice thing probably about the 429 is there's a lot more aftermarket parts readily available, for that. So I think it'd be easier to build horsepower. A little bit tougher to do the install, I think.
Yeah, because you're taking a look at that wild time that Ford had, the 427, 428, 429. You know, I mean, how long did the 427 stay with us, stay with Ford? Not long.
No, there wasn't a lot of them. You know, and that's why, you know, the old muscle, you know, one of the reasons I believe, like, the old muscle cars are worth so much money, right? I mean, you look at a Boss 302 that was made, you know, modern day. I mean, we made a lot of them. You take a look at the Coyotes and Mustang GTs, awesome package, made a lot of them. You go back to like 69, how many Boss 302s did we make? You know, 1,700. How many 427 Fairlanes were there? Not many. So that's what makes those old cars rare. How many Hemi Cuda convertibles were there made? Very, very few, right? How many, you know, big block, you know, Yanko Camaros were made, or Copo Camaros? Very, very few. That's why they think those cars are so rare and desirable today.
But why did they jump off the 427 so quickly?
The 427 was, you know, again, not being around then, so it's just my guess.
Sure, that's right? All we're doing.
Yep. Is, you know, it was a higher RPM motor, you know, bigger bore, shorter stroke. I don't think maybe the valve train was as strong as some of the modern stuff we talked about, the technology that goes into like something like the Godzilla. So I just, and, you know, white had cross bolted mains and a lot of good stuff. I just think two things: it was a lot more costly than the 428. It didn't have the low speed output or torque of a 428. So the 428 was actually kind of more fun to drive. And I think the way the 428 Cobra Jet first came along was a dealer in Rhode Island, Haska Ford, took a, what did he do? I think he took a 390 and put a 427 crank in it with the 427 heads, and that made the first 428. He did it in the dealer, and then had the Ford executives come and look at it and say, look, I think this is going to be something good. And that's kind of how that little avenue was born with, you know, back in the day when you could do stuff like that.
Yeah, because we're taking a look at, because we had to explain to folks, it's because they come back because they don't know, but they were saying, well, why did they make a brand new engine 1 cubic inch bigger than the next, you know, as opposed to like taking a huge jump?
Yeah, and I'm not sure why didn't they make the 427, 428 more different? Don't know. You know, but the bores were significantly different. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I mean, but it was a, you know, smaller bore, longer stroke, better for bottom end, better for drivability.
Here's another question. If you could bring back any engine that Ford had, what would you bring back?
I kind of like the current lineup.
All right. That being said, we know it'd be the Godzilla. We know.
Well, yeah, because again, the Coyote is so good, right? I mean, you know, the new Mustangs are like 3,900 pounds, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not light, you know, and you know, right off the showroom, I mean, they're 11-second cars that you don't have to do anything to but drive them. You know, don't even have to change the tires, and they're running 11s. And I think about when I ran, like, and I loved my little 302. I mean, I like that little deck height, 8200 deck height, 302. Great engine. Very small, very compact. Good power. But again, you know, to get that car in the 11s, I mean, I had, you know, weight taken out of it. I had sound deadening out of it. You know, I had, you know, the GT40 heads, I had a big cam, full-length headers, yada, yada, yada. You know, and that went like 1166 at 115, you know, with drag slicks on it. So lots of effort with a car that was probably 1,200 pounds lighter than the new Mustangs that, you know, had no air conditioning, had no heater, had no radio in it. So I'm just saying, you know, the new stuff is just so, so good. You know, it would, you know, to bring one back, yeah, I like the 8200 deck height, but, you know, the Coyote's just so much better.
Yeah, I mean, I think what he was saying with the modern twist, you know, of all those engines, because obviously you wouldn't be wanting to bring back a 283 at any given time, nor would you want to bring back a 318 in the Chrysler line, ever. I mean, we don't even acknowledge that motor. However, that's what you're absolutely right. When you take a look at Hellcats and you take a look at the Mustangs, and these cars are running 11s with full warranty, you know, from the dealer, what? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, what's break-in? Just hit it, get it, and go.
Absolutely. You know, and then, you know, like, you know, again, the guys at Palm Beach Dyno, I think one of their customers in one of the new GT500s, so again, an expensive vehicle, but without taking a valve cover off, so lots of bolt-on parts, better air, you know, better supercharger, better intercooler, you know, lots of work on the tune, some work on the suspension, some lightweight parts, but still over 30, you know, over 3,900 pounds, you know, 8 seconds in the quarter mile. I mean, high eights, low, you know, nine O's. It's, you know, it's crazy.
It is. It's absolutely, considering that you would think back in the quote-unquote horsepower days, you know, you're lucky if you had a GTX that ran low 12s, you know, with a 440. Lucky.
Yeah, absolutely. My 420 Cobra Jet Fairlane was, yeah, I mean, again, it was, who knows what was done to it, but it was a 420 Cobra Jet Fairlane automatic, and that went like 14.2s.
Yeah, and not the most aerodynamic cars either, you know.
No.
And especially with some of those ones with four-wheel drum brakes.
Yes.
That's what you want to stop. But we don't want to stop, but we kind of got to. Brian, what did we not talk about in 2 minutes?
Ooh, we only got 2 minutes left? Oh, boy.
Go.
Well, I think maybe the thing we didn't talk about, but it's not really Godzilla-related, but I don't know if we can cover it in 2 minutes,
sure.
Is just... one of the things I do like to talk about is, you know, electric vehicles versus internal combustion. And I think with the right engineering assessment, with the right look at the facts, there's a really good place for both of those vehicles, where I think electric vehicles in major metropolitan cities will be great for cutting down smog and cutting the carcinogenics down, where there's a lot of people on the streets and a lot of cars sitting there idling. And I think on open roads where you have a high efficient internal combustion engine, it's going to be just fine. And you look at full environmental impact from getting the raw materials out of the ground to putting them back in the ground after the car is recycled. I think there is a good solution. I just wish that the global legislators would take a hard look at the whole picture and not think there's the one size fits all.
Yeah, well, take a look at Ford, take a look at GM. Geez, oh, Pete, going full electric in a decade? I mean, and Ford's kind of leading the pack here.
Well, I don't see it. Now, did Ford announce that they're going to go all electric in a decade?
I meant GM in 10 years. But Ford's coming out with, I mean, I'm not sure what engine they're hanging on to. But, boy, they like to promote that 1,400 horsepower electric.
Mach 1 or Cobra Jet.
And it's super impressive, Brian. I mean, it really is. But, boy, you can't get them off the track.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think what Ford maybe is trying to do, and I don't know being retired, but I think, you know, if you put, you know, the electric products, like, you know, they did the Mach-Es, you know, try to, you know, say, well, you know, hey, it can be a fun car to drive. I hear the Lightning's going to be all electric. So I think they're trying to say, hey, you know, even in these enthusiast cars, these are great engines. Or powertrains, excuse me, or propulsion systems, depending on what you want to say.
Yeah.
I tend to agree, but I do think that a single go for one answer in the current world isn't probably the right thing. I think there's a better way to go about that. That worries about the environment, you know, and also worries about practicality too.
Well, I don't think that ICE engines are going away anytime soon. I mean, they're just too many. They had a head start. You know, they're here. They're going to be here longer than after you and I are both gone, you know. So
I mean, agree.
I think that there's sometimes, and we talk to people at tracks about this, they think it's going to be like a light switch. It's like, there it is, you know, you have to scrap every one of your, you know, ICE engines and stuff like that. And that's, no, guys, by the time electric gets up and gets on a full scale, it'll be very, very, you know, I know that GM is very, you know, 10 years and they're going to be, and I understand from a manufacturing standpoint kind of where they're coming from, you know, but, you know, they ain't going away.
No, I don't think, I'd make a bet that won't happen. I mean, they might say that as an inspirational goal to say we want to go this far, But again, you know, there's a lot of bad things that come out that you for the environment to get electric vehicles to market. You know, we used to call it well to wheel. So, you know, from digging and mining the raw materials needed to make the vehicle to build the first one. And I don't have the exact statistics, I wish I could quote them, but it was something like, you know, the Tesla, there's more CO2 produced to get it to the showroom than an equivalent internal combustion engines to get to the showroom and will burn in 100,000 miles.
And talking about burning, we just burnt the clock way too long on the other side. Brian, come back with us. God bless it. I mean, go for number 7. Because we love having you on, man. Absolutely, positively do. Thanks. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hang on the phone for just a second, Brian. We'll get right back to you. But right now, CKW, the home of high performance since the 60s and 70s with the Rolling Stones.